When we look at the present, we can learn about the what to discover and, well, at least try to understand the why. We need to turn to the past, to history. It's the best way to learn as well as diffuse fallacies some try to push as facts today. This exploration of the past when it comes to the expression and acts of anti-Semitism committed by Muslims is what my guest has done and talks about today. The studies of this history are featured in his book, The Legacy of Islamic Anti-Semitism, From Sacred Text to Solemn History. He is a retired Brown University medical professor, now writes extensively about this aspect of Islam. Dr. Andrew Bostom, how are you today, sir?
Very, very well, thanks.
Doctor's website, andrewbostom, BOSTOM.org. I don't know why I spelled, because it's also posted at our homepage as well for you to visit and learn from his writings and certainly from his book, The Legacy of Islamic Anti-Semitism, which on its title alone, Andrew, it flies in the face of the at least, as I said in the intro, the false fact that a lot of people want to present that anti-Semitism in Islam is a 20th century creation. That's can't be further from the truth, can it?
Yeah, it's really hardwired in the foundational texts and the foundational activities of the nascent Muslim community under Islam's prophet Muhammad. There are signs of targeting of Jews, and there are some very virulent anti-Semitic themes in the Quran, in the traditions of Muhammad, in the earliest biographies of Muhammad. So, no, it's unfortunately a very misleading trope that's been out there for a long time.
And when you realize, too, that these tropes are committed to memory through prayer numerous times a day, these are more than teachings. These are probably even indoctrination is an understatement.
Yeah, I mean, you can literally so the way the Quran is arranged is a rather rambling arrangement, because it turns out that other than the opening of the Quran, which is called the Fatiha, the first chapter or surah, the chapters 2 to 114 are basically arranged, with minor exception, longest to shortest. So the second chapter of the Quran is clearly the longest chapter, and again, by and large, that's the ordering. So it's a pretty rambling and discursive narrative. It's not like the Old Testament or the New Testament, which have a clear chronology to them. But with this verse that was probably added on, called the opening, so it is actually the first chapter. It's very, very short, and it's basically the first six short verses are, praise to Allah, etc. But the seventh verse says that Muslims must follow the straight path, the path of Islam, not the path of those who've incurred Allah's anger or those who've gone astray. And in a tradition of Muhammad, he explains clearly that those who've incurred Allah's anger are the Jews, and those who've gone astray are the Christians. And the anger against the Jews is tied to a whole series of Quranic verses and themes which relate to essentially the Jews rejecting the message of Muhammad because of their inherent perfidiousness. And it really reads like an indictment, conviction, and punishment process when you look at the large sections of the Quran that are devoted to the Jews. And Muslim Quranic commentators and polemicists will tell you about a third of the Quran is dedicated to the Jews, and they're painted in very dark terms. They're Al-Azhar University, which is the Sunni, as close as you'll get in Islam, because it is more decentralized, it's the Sunni Muslim equivalent of a Vatican in Cairo. It's where President Obama made a visit during early in his presidency and was singing the praises of their tolerance, which they are not. Yeah. But regardless, they have over the years, over the last 50 years or so, published litanies, literal Quranic litanies of the Jews' negative traits, with citations from the Quran, anywhere from 20 to 25 negative traits that are indelible traits. So, yeah, I always when I began studying, doing my research a little over 20 years now, that was one of the first tropes that I just found impossible to understand. When you just sat down and read the Quran, read the collections of traditions of Muhammad, read the Muslim biographies of Muhammad, it was impossible to reconcile that with this notion that anti-Semitism was introduced solely from the West to the Muslim world. It just didn't make any sense to me. Never has, never will.
And as you mentioned, the Quran features approximately a third of the content being anti-Jew. So that also flies in the face of anyone saying that someone such
as... Well, Chris, I just want to say it's not all negative, but the problem is that the narrative evolves from from the phase where the Jews, at least from the Muslim perspective, might be open to Islam, to where they clearly are not, and then Muhammad wages jihad against them. So obviously it gets darker and darker.
Sure, you can say, they're fine Jews, but until they become Muslims, they're really not going to be fond of them.
Exactly. People think that that's some sort of far-fetched interpretation. No, that's exactly the narrative. The Jews that are featured in a positive way all converted to Islam, and there's a very small number of them that are referenced. But those are the only ones that actually understand their own faith. You have to look at it from the Muslim perspective. The only Jews that actually understand Judaism, or the only Christians that actually understand Christianity, converted to Islam because it's the primordial monotheism. It says this in the Quran, in the third surah chapter, the 67th verse. It says Abraham was neither a Jew nor a Christian. He was a Muslim. And so, if Jews and Christians understood their faith properly, they would realize that whatever monotheism they thought they were practicing, if it was practiced in its ideal, pure form, they would realize it was Islam. And even though Islam historically came later, they would convert to Islam. And that's just basically the understanding that Muslims have.
Dr. Andrew Boston, his book, The Legacy of Islamic Anti-Semitism, From Sacred Text to Solemn History, andrewboston.org, his website. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. I am of the belief that you've no doubt have been accused of misinterpreting, glossing over, call it whatever you want, generalizing. How direct are some of these tropes within the Quran?
It's pretty well described by Quranic commentators, Muslim Quranic commentators, more modern students of Islam and who hold positions in Islamic teaching institutions. Like I said, they publish litanies of these verses. And then I was able, and I definitely included material like this in my compendia and in essays that I've written since. There have been non-Muslim scholars. Their work needs much more attention, I think. But I found some, particularly in the 1930s, up to about 1940 or so. There were two outstanding Jewish scholars. One was a rabbi, Hungarian rabbi, who studied mostly in France, whose last name was Vajda. And he published a magnificent essay on the anti-Semitic themes in the traditions, in the Hadith. It's about a 75-page essay that had only been in French, and I commissioned a full translation of the essay and all its citations for inclusion in the Legacy of Islamic Anti-Semitism. And then there was a shorter work by Moshe Perelman, who studied the whole medieval Muslim, Christian, Jewish polemic. And as part of his PhD thesis, he has a very short section on the anti-Semitic themes, particularly in the Quran, but also in the Hadith. And so you can get, through the works like this, independent validation of either what the literal text says, if there's any uncertainty about what the words themselves say in the Quran and the traditions, or The Muslim interpretation, the Muslim scholars' interpretation of these verses, and so you know, there it really is, again, it's very difficult to reconcile you know, these kinds of the texts and their classical interpretation by Muslims and their interpretations by non-Muslim scholars who are honest and serious about the study. Do I have a moment? I could just read you something from Perlman's PhD thesis. It's a remarably compendious summary. I don't know if would time permit that. No,
by all means, certainly.
Okay, so here he's talking about just a summary of the key verses that are. In the Quran, and why he believes that it's a very anti-Semitic assessment of the Jews. He says, forgetting the divine dispensation, the Jews transgressed Allah's commandments and flouted the prophets and even slew them. He gives one example of that. That's Quran 381, so the third surah, the 181st verse. That'll be the shorthand for these verses. Therefore, many punishments fell upon them. That's Quran 261. For example, some of them were turned into apes for desecrating the Sabbath. That's repeated twice in the Quran at 265 and 7166. Muhammad came to confirm their scriptures. In other words, that's 3.3, 4.51, but they did not accept him. They concealed the revelation. That's a common accusation. You see that at 242, 371, or did not understand it. In other words, they didn't understand the Torah. They didn't understand their own texts. Which are really, you know, corrupted versions of the Quran. They tried to mislead people, 369, 399, having no compunction about deceiving the pagan Arabs, that's 369. Therefore, although they knew from their books all about Muhammad, as they knew their own children, Quran 2146, they made false statements about the scriptures, 451, 549, distorting the text. In contradiction to them, the prophet, Muhammad, declares that Abraham and Ishmael were Muslim prophets. That's at 2.124, and the verse I mentioned earlier, 367 and 368, who built the Meccan temple, 2.125, 397, before the revelation of Moses, to which the Jews refer. Thus, Islam is the original revelation. This cuts the ground from under the feet of the unbelievers. They make blasphemous statements that God's Allah's hand is chained up. That's Quran 564. That Uzair Ezra is the son of Allah. That's Quran 930. At the same time, they are stubborn in their opposition to the true prophet. That they must be regarded as enemies. That's Quran 328 and 551 and 557. The believers will find that they are their fiercest enemies. The Jews that he's referring to. The Christians being much more friendly. That's Quran 582. Therefore, after they had rejected many friendly overtures, that's Quran 259 and 581, it was decided they must be fought against, made tributaries, and compelled to pay poll tax as a mark of their humiliation. That's Quran 929, and that outlines the eternal jihad against so-called people of the book. And their subjection to Islamic law, which imposes all kinds of humiliating and human rights depriving regulations. And then he does confirm that in that opening chapter or surah that I mentioned, that the final verse, those who earned your anger are Allah's anger are supposed to refer to the Jews and. I won't bore you with going through what he says about the traditions, but what he concludes through the traditions is that they, the Jews, became in a way the incarnation of evil. So when you think about and you know, Perlman was a very staid, meticulous scholar, particularly a linguist, and he's writing this in 1940. So I have to say that it was actually shocking to me, again, that as you open the show, that this idea persisted that somehow, you know, it was the West, it was Christian missionaries, it was the protocols of the Elders of Zion, it was the Nazis who somehow introduced anti-Semitism in this pristine, Jew-friendly environment. It's just absurd.
We have to wrap up here, but in light of what you've just heard in the history that Dr. Boston writes in his book, that certainly, when you look in the here and now with the current state of things in the Middle East, certainly makes you not really think the two-state solution would be anything that Islam would want to go for, given the ingrained hatred and anti-Semitism they have for the Jewish people. Makes you also wonder, too, with the information that Andrew just shared, too, that this hatred would have existed still, even if Israel was never reestablished by the UN in 1947-48. And also gives us hope, because if you've been listening to the show for a while, you've realized I've had Muslims on the show who are not a follower of the Quran for these reasons. So maybe are those the people that hold the key to change? And
They do. If they're willing to be honest about this, you see, that's a very important caveat, because just recently there was a lovely Pakistani Muslim woman who appeared at the rally this week, the massive rally in Washington D.C. And I loved what she said about Israel clearly has a right to exist and to be free from constant invasion and attacks. But then she justified it on the basis of a totally bowdlerized and version of the Quran, misrepresenting and or completely ignoring what I just summarized for you. And so it cannot be done without a basic mea culpa, acknowledging how toxic the canon is, the doctrine is, and then reforming it. Much more akin to what happened with Nostra Aetate in Vatican II. I mean, particularly the Church Fathers were challenged directly at their interpretation of the New Testament, which was elusive but could certainly be interpreted in a very anti-Semitic way, and was. It was an internal movement that began even before the Holocaust, and certainly accelerated, with the Holocaust and after World War II, and was joined by a very prominent Jewish public intellectual and historian, Jules Isaac, who made the observation, okay, well, if you can't reform the word, you can certainly reform the man-made interpretations of the word and acknowledge that the words have been poisonous over the centuries. We're light years from that process in Islam, including, unfortunately, amongst the Muslim reformers. I've never heard them come clean about, again, what I just summarized for you. But there's always the possibility that will happen. We have to pray for it.
His book is The Legacy of Islamic Anti-Semitism, From Sacred Text to Solemn History. Also writes extensively about this topic. You can keep up with his writings at andrewboston.org. Yes, we do have it linked at our homepage as well. Dr. Andrew Boston, you present the value of history, the directness of the history in this particular instance, and it certainly is not vague by any stretch of the imagination. Thank you for bringing that reality to a greater light. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much.